Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's cracking? What's up? It is here, the Jim Rome Show podcast. If you could not catch the show live, you simply hit the subscribe button, you download the podcast every day, and you never miss out on a great take or an interview or a call or anything that matters that happens here in the jungle. So, without further ado, here is the very best from Monday's show. I mean, here we are. Here the bleep we are. Minneapolis, Minnesota, and damn glad to be here. Thank you very much. I'm going to check my weather app right now. When I got up this morning, it was 4 degrees. Right now, for the most updated winter or weather, 6 degrees and sunny. Let me tell you about this. The land of 10,000 lakes is about to become the land of 10,000 takes. 10,000 tired, played out, cold weather takes. But not from this SoCal cat. Nah, I got this. I, for one, am pumped to be in the bold north. I am stoked to be broadcasting from a mall the size of 78 football fields. Stoked to be amongst bright minds. The bright minds that brought us Scotch Tape, Bisquick, the Breakfast of Champs. Hell, forget stoked. I am straight up honored to be here. As an example, did you even know that Minnesota is home to the nation's first performed open heart surgery? Probably not, but you do now. Because some blowhard is probably polluting your airwaves with another lazy weather report that you've heard 1,000 times. You're not getting that from me. I love it here. Love the weather. Love the mall. Love that they call it the Bold North. It's the Bold North, not the Cold North. The freaking stapler was invented in this town. I mean, our working lives are literally held together by a device that was invented in Minnesota. Hey, you ever drop a piece of bread in a toaster? Minnesota. Ever lace up some rollerblades or strapped on a pair of water skis? Freaking Minnesota. Ever been dragged around by the wife all Saturday afternoon in a Target superstore? You already know. Minnesota. So this place right here is so much more than a frozen thermometer. It is that. But there's much more to it than that. So much more than hot takes on cold weather. The only bad thing about Super Bowl week is that it's not Super Bowl month. Because 7 days ain't going to be enough to experience everything that Minnesota has to offer. So if you're looking for me to cry about being in a mall, if you're looking for me to cry about the weather outside, you're barking up the wrong tree. Couldn't be happier to be here. I've done so many of these things and nothing quite like this. So get fitted for some plaid, throw on your trapper hat, lace up your boots. I'm digging in and not shoveling out. I am damn glad to be here. Really glad to be here. It's freaking cold, yo. It is really, really cold, but it's awesome. I mean, the sun is out. The mall is banging already. Everybody's coming in. This is good. Eric Kendricks is my guest. Eric, what's up? How are you?
Man, that was the best introduction I've had in a while. Thank you.
That probably was, right? It's not going to get any better than that. You got a good resume, so it's good to talk to you. Listen, you've been with the Vikings for 3 years now, and you're my first guest of the week. So before we talk football, let's talk Minnesota. How has Minneapolis treated you since you got here in 2015?
Man, these past couple of days, definitely, you know, a culmination of how Minneapolis has treated me. You know, I had a couple appearances and stuff these past couple of days, and I kind of was dreading it, you know, because I didn't really want to talk about, you know, the loss and things like that. You know, still a little sore from that wound, but the people couldn't have been better. You know, they were so supportive and so nice to me, and that's how Minnesota's been, man. It's been awesome.
It's a very, very nice place with nice people. Now, when you look at that, obviously the season did not end the way you wanted to end. Are you able to look back on it and find some positives, or right now, is that wound still kind of open? Are you feeling like it didn't end the way we wanted it to? So if it ends in anything short of a ring, it's going to be a disappointment.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely an aspect of it that's like that, 100%. But, you know, there's things that are just bigger than football at the end of the day, you know, like you know, my health at the end of the season. You know, a lot of guys go down in the season, and that's just what it is. And I'm just thankful for my health at this point of the season. And the opportunity, you know, I'm just gonna get back to work and try to get it again.
Eric Kendricks, my guest. Sorry to jump in on you. I was going to say, this notion of injuries, I mean, you're right. That team had a lot of injuries, key injuries. Sam Bradford, Dalvin Cook. And yet you continued to roll and you had a huge season. So what's it say about the team mentally and physically that you were able to beat back those injuries and have the year that you did have collectively?
Man, I feel like our team is just so good and resilient. You know, we always try to win when we're out there. You know, obviously, you know, it didn't happen for us, but, you know, I'm already thinking about next year.
We're talking to Eric Kendricks. He is live on the set, and we're here for Super Bowl 52. Now, you're not playing in that game, but your brother Michael, who's been on this show a number of times, is playing in the Super Bowl with the Eagles. In the immediate aftermath of that championship game, you were asked whether or not you were happy for him. I loved your answer. Quote, "I don't care if he's on the other team or not. I'm trying to win, so right now I'm mad. Yeah, I'm not happy for him." End quote. All right, so time has passed. Are you happy for him now?
I mean, the happy is such a general statement. You know what I mean?
There are degrees of happiness, yeah, right?
But the thing is, like, just saw, seeing my brother yesterday, you know, I just say, like, everything we've been through, and you know, just see him how hard he's worked and things like that, and it's definitely super cool that he's in the situation he's in, and he has a chance to try to win it all, man. That's what I mean. That's been the dream of ours, you know, since we were kids. You know, I've obviously wanted to get there myself, but we were the losing team that day. So he has the opportunity, and I'm excited for him.
Minnesota Viking Eric Kendricks joining me on the set. All right, so you mentioned when you were kids, dude. What was that game like for your mom? Knowing that one of you was going to be hyped and one of you was going to be crushed, how did she spend that day? What was that like for her?
You know what? For my whole family in general, you know, they obviously support both of us. So it's a win-win for them. But at the end of the day, you know, I got all the text messages from and the phone calls from my family members. And they were consulting me. But at the end of the day, like, they were still posting pictures, like, celebrating with my brother and congratulating him. So, I mean, like I said, it's just so much bigger than the game at this point, you know. Just the people who are reaching out for me from my hometown, Fresno, California, the whole week, and teachers and faculty, coaches, you know, people who had impact in me and my brother's life, and in a positive way, and that's who it was all about that day.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Fresno. Central Cali. I'm a SoCal native. I didn't get up there too often, but I've been to Fresno, I've been to Baco, I've been to Modesto. This is good. Good place to be, and there are a lot of great athletes there. You played your high school ball at Hoover High School in Fresno. So what was life like growing up in Fresno?
Yeah, you know, it was good. It was humbling, you know. It was always hot in the summer. You know, definitely worked my tail off in the camps and stuff like that, to get where I'm at. But you know, I love the people there, you know, and I love my city, and I want to help with the kids at the end of the day, you know, that were in situations like myself, and that's what it's all about. And can't wait to get back and visit my family and friends.
Yeah, Eric, your defense this year had an amazing year. You were first in the NFL in points, yards allowed per game. You led the league in third down rate. Mike Zimmer, though, is already talking about how that defense can get better. I mean, I'm looking at these numbers. It's hard to get better than that. Where do you think you guys can improve?
I feel like we're just we communicate pretty well and everything like that. So it's always about just doing better, like you said. I'm with him on that. They can always get less yards. They can always get less points.
You know, time and time again, I hear from Viking players what it means to play for Mike Zimmer. What's up, man? You all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, like, yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Like, we can actually play better.
You do think so? It's not just something the coach is saying and pushing you.
I mean, I feel like everyone in that room is just, that's what they're motivated. You know, they're motivated to try to be the best they can be. And it just is what it is. Like, everyone's mentality has that kill mentality. And it's hard to find. And I feel like we got that.
You know, and you find 53 guys with that in the same room, and you're not going to come off the field defeated very often. Now, what about Mike Zimmer? Every time I talk to a Viking, guys rave about how special he is. How would you describe the bond that he has with that team, and what makes him so different or special as a coach?
Man, I just feel like everything is situational based. You know, he's always dropping little points, little hints, and stuff like that that you know you should probably know and pay attention to. Otherwise, he'll quiz you on random times. But at the end of the day, it's just little situational work and just teaching little aspects of the game little bit by little bit throughout the week or whatever, over and over and over again. You just start to pick up on these little keys in football that add up and win you games.
Eric Kendricks joining me for a few more moments on our simulcast. We're live on Radio Row in Minneapolis. Now, since you joined the Vikings, you've partnered with the Sheridan Story. It's a nonprofit. It fights childhood hunger locally here. What was it about that made you want to get involved?
Man, honestly, I wanted to help with something. You know, I knew I was put on this platform, you know, to help kids and things like that. So that's what I wanted to do first and foremost. Reach out to a couple of people, heard about the Sheridan Story, and knew that they were, you know, doing a great thing for kids in Minneapolis who suffer from hunger. You know, a lot of kids go to school every day, you know, not knowing where them, you know, it's sad. And I just wanted to help out with that as best as I could, and it was a great fit.
Imagine, I mean, we get caught up in the lamest things ever. Like, this isn't right, that's not right. How about waking up every morning and not have enough food to eat?
Yeah.
Going to school hungry.
Absolutely. You know, and sometimes it's all the time, it's pivotal to this kid's success, you know, on test scores and things like that. So we're trying to give them the best shot they can get.
Clones, give me 1 second so I can talk to you about Stamps.com. Now, here's a New Year's resolution that you can actually keep. Add Stamps.com to your business and save a ton of time and money this year. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't need that resolution this year because I've already done it, and I wish I had done it sooner. Stamps.com has saved me so much time and so much money. You see, Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Stamps.com is the better way to get postage. You simply use your computer to print U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail, and you let the mailman pick it up. You don't leave your office. There's no more lugging mail to the post office. There is no more hassle. So Stamps.com saves you time and money. Almost everything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Stamps.com. Convenient, easy, reliable, efficient. And those are all the reasons why I use Stamps.com. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Are you ready for a happier new year? Then go to Stamps.com. Hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Once again, to take advantage of this great offer, Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Now it's back to our daily jungle.
Eric, I got to ask you, as a guy that grew up in Central California, I've only been here a few hours. I'm good. I'm inside the mall. It's toasty. But dude, and even if you have a beautiful facility like you do, what was it like for you to acclimate to the winters here when you're from Cali?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I was like just in awe, like, do you see this weather? Do you? No, but
seriously, I mean, you're right.
What I like about here is, you know, when it is bad weather, you know, obviously it gets cold and things like that. But when it's good weather, I feel like everyone takes advantage of the nice days here, and like in the spring and stuff like that, when it's a beautiful day out, you see everyone flooded the streets, everyone's smiling, everyone's being even nicer than they already are in Minnesota, which is crazy. But yeah, man.
You got to take advantage of those days. We take them for granted. When it's 75 degrees every single day, most every day of the year, you take it for granted. All right, last thought. You're working with Indochino. You don't have the suit on that I thought you were going to have, but tell me about the work you're doing with those folks.
Man, I will be wearing a suit. I mean, sharp. I like wearing sneakers with my suit, and they definitely helped me out there on the first floor. Just getting my pants even fitted how I wanted it to fit, and everything was custom to how I wanted, and it's great, great. I actually have an appearance here at 5:30 on Thursday, so if y'all want to come say hi.
Where?
Check me out. In the Chino, first floor.
Okay. All right, and that's Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so how are you going to spend the rest of the week? You've got that appearance. Have you got people hitting you up for tickets, for a place to crash, for any advice? What's the rest of the week look like for you?
I'm going to be a little busy doing little stops here and there, appearances and things like that. But at the end of the day, my family's coming in town. I'm going to try to spend some time with them. And anything my brother needs throughout the week, you can just hit me up.
All right, so you can't go get your brother, right? Is there any way I could get you to step off of that and be as objective and impartial as you possibly can?
Man,
looking at that matchup, man, who do you like? Forget who your brother plays for.
Man, we're on a team, though. Got to go for my brother. Straight up.
Okay, so what do they have to do to win that game?
Play well. Make the plays when they're presented. That's how it always is, man. You got to make the plays. Playmakers got to make plays in these games.
Pretty simple game, right?
I mean, block and tackle.
Andre Tippett is my guest. Andre, it's been a minute or two. It's great to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thank you for having me in. It's awesome to see you. It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. It's great to see you. Now, you and I have never come together in a mall. Look, everything has changed, the game, on the field, off the field. But as you look around you, when was the last time you were in this space, and what do you make of this?
Last time I was here was probably 1993, and it's amazing to kind of see everything and how it's improved. And this mall is like the biggest mall in the country, and it's just amazing.
All right, so you've got your jacket on, and I started by saying you're in the Hall of Fame. You just celebrated your 10th anniversary of the Hall of Fame. What does that honor mean to you?
That is, I still pinch myself. And the fact that I'm able to celebrate 10 years of being part of the National Football League Pro Football Hall of Fame, and what a great honor it is, and it's amazing.
So when you first started playing football, was the Hall of Fame in the back of your mind, or was that just never even on your radar and never crossed your mind?
Never crossed my mind. I mean, you looked at great players, who you considered great players or who was anointed great players, and you wanted to try to get to that level of what they were doing. Anybody that was playing high and playing at a high production rate, that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to emulate that.
All right, so who were some of the guys you emulated when you were growing up? Who were your guys, and who did you try to emulate as you got into the game and progressed?
You know, it's funny. Before I got into the game, you look at guys like Jack Ham, Robert Brazil. You look at Thomas Hollywood Henderson. You look at, you know, look at those guys and see what they were bringing to the game. And it's like, I think I want to try that. I want to see if I can get that. And then when you get to the game, and it's like, all right, well, who's who? Well, so many of us that all, you know, were drafted based on LT's prototype. Mm. And we all were, you know, big, tall, fast, strong, but who could sustain? And that was the key to it all, sustaining. And it was the era of the 80s and the linebackers, all those guys. There were some great guys that played linebacker in the 80s.
Now, there were. You mentioned Jack Ham. It's about the Steelers alone. Ham, Lambert, Andy Russell.
Yep.
Right? Who am I forgetting? Who was the fourth? Never mind Donnie Shell's flying around,
looking
to put some lumber to somebody.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was a very different time, a very different game. You know, and then you got the Patriots. Now, you were part of some very good Patriots teams and some Patriots teams that were not so great. What's it like now as you lay out and you see the dynasty and the way they've dominated since the turn of the century?
It's amazing because, you know, everybody's not built to play for the Patriots. And when Bill asked you to do this for the greater good and to give of yourself, if you are a great pass rusher, but we're not going to put you in that many situations so you can get your numbers up. Or if you're a great receiver, we're not going to allow you to have 100 catches every year. But we're going to put you in some positions that we know that you're going to win those individual battles and those mixed the situations that we put you in, situational football. All of those things, it's been amazing because we've sustained for 15, 16 years. Ownership, head coach, quarterback, guys really wanting to be here in New England because everybody's not willing to do that.
What is it that guys can't do? The Patriot way. I mean, you're not even talking about the most talented guys. I've never seen a guy get so much out of what he has. Will Belichick find a guy who might have a little bit less game, a little bit less talent, but will do his job? Is that
Absolutely.
The end of the day what we're talking about?
Absolutely. Because Bill's done his due diligence. He's studied this guy, and he knows that, you know what? We're going to ask you to do one thing. And, you know, yeah, if you're granted, if you can contribute on special teams, or a particular situation, that's extra. But most of the time, he's asking you defensively, offensively, to do that one thing. Just do it good, and you contribute, and then we'll move on.
Do your job. Andre Tippett, his Hall of Famer, joins me on location in the Mall of America. So when you watch the game right now, I mean, as somebody who was with the Patriots for a long time, I know you appreciate what you see, but you can't be watching the same game that you played back in the day yourself. What do you think when you watch the game today?
It's changed, and I understand the safety issues that have come up over the last 15, 20 years, but it's a different game. I have literally this year counted on my hands the times that I've seen defensive guys break through the line, and they got to hesitate because they're afraid to hit a guy a certain way. I didn't grow up that way. I wasn't trained to play that way, and I understand the meaning behind it and why it needs to get done, but the game is different than what I play. And I laugh. I look at some of my highlight tapes, and I would probably be broke if I was hitting guys the way I hit guys back then during my career because of the changes in the game.
So is it better, worse, or just different? And do the changes need to be made?
I think it's different. I think it's different. And I think that they will always be changes to be made, both offensively and defensively, to get the game to stay and remain at that high level of competition.
Listen, you made a great sacrifice in committing yourself to the game. Let me ask you this. In no way am I disrespecting that era, but just set me straight if I'm wrong. Are guys bigger, faster, stronger? Is it more violent even than when you played the game, or is it no different?
No, guys are bigger, faster. I think the collisions are getting stronger. I've stood on our sideline watching the opposing team, and I've watched our team. I've watched the offensive linemen. I've watched contact, and I sort of cringe a little bit now because, you know, when I look at guys that make contact, my knees hurt a little bit because
right.
I'm like, wow, you know, I'm in my mind, I'm anticipating what that's going to feel like. And it's, you know, for, you know, I flinch a little bit because right now I would never want to get hit by any of these guys. There's some big guys out there. You look at Gronk, 280 something pounds, 270 pounds.
Dude, and to run the way he runs at that size, to be
absolutely.
The athlete that he is at that size.
Absolutely. Scary. Line up and try to.
Yeah, I know you're not giving away any state secrets with your team, but what do you do about Gronk? How do you contain Gronk? I mean, the only thing that stopped him is injury over the years. But if you're a D coordinator and you're trying to match up with him, what do you do about Gronk?
Well, you know, I always go back to, you know, what I did as a player. What do we have to do in order to slow him up? And, you know, one, you got to slow his release off the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
You got to step up in his face, and hey, you got to be physical. And that's how we play. You got to be physical with the release. If you know he's going into, you know, make it hard for him.
I'd argue the same thing right with the guys. The smaller guys on the outside, man, disrupt them. You got to get them. You got to get
reroute
into them at the line of scrimmage, or they're going to get theirs.
Yeah, and you got to reroute them. Absolutely.
Andre Tippett joining me for a few more moments. Where do you come out on the issue of the quarterback? Now, you got Tom Brady. He's got five. He's trying to get six. He might win that third MVP award. You went up against some of the best to ever do it. Is Brady the GOAT?
He's the GOAT. You got to, you know, I'm not a homer. I'm just facing the fact that he's done some great things. He's had an opportunity to sustain and contribute year in, year out. And he takes care of himself, and he's found a way to compete at a very high level for a long time.
How is he still doing what he's doing at 40?
I think one is passion. If you lose passion for the game, then it tends to make things scary for you. And I think because he's kept the passion and the ability to take care of yourself, you got to take care of yourself. You got to, you know, you're going to take hits, even at a quarterback. And he's done all of it. He's taken care of his body. And those are the two things.
Right. So when you played the game, what went first? Your ability as you got older, or the will to prepare and do what you had to do day in and day out to be the player that you were?
I think for me was my my body.
Yeah.
My body talked to me, and I took some hits, some things that just kind of registered, and it's like, that didn't feel right, and that's not you don't want to be running around like that. And I think just listening to my body told me it was time to step away.
Right, now your son plays.
My son plays.
What kind of player is he? Where is he, and what kind of a player is he?
He's at Towson University. He's just finished up his freshman year. He's a safety, punt returner. A kid with a lot of passion for the game. He's not blessed with his dad's size and things like that, but he has some athletic ability. He has a passion for the game, and he's willing to pay the price.
You know, it's really something because you were a second-round pick out of Iowa. But if I go back all the way to high school in Newark, you played for a guy named Frank Verducci. What do you remember about meeting him for the first time?
Wow. Coach has always been a guy that will tell you the truth, and he will not lie to you. He had a way of making you search your soul for a lot of different things. And he was he's a father figure to a lot of us. He was the dad, and he was the mentor that we didn't have to guide us in the right direction. He was that guy. He was that guy for a lot of kids that grew up in Newark, New Jersey, that played for him.
Do you still hear him in your head right now?
Every day, and I relay it to my son. I usually try to give Coach a call from time to time to just say hello. And we enjoy each other. We have a great relationship.
I know how much he means to you because you used one of his sayings in your induction speech in Canton. Quote, "Rob me of my money and you have nothing, but rob me of my name and you take my most prized possession." That's pretty serious. What exactly does that mean to you?
You know, it was just Coach being a parent, being a teaching us to be kind of street smart and hard work, accountable. It was so many lessons in that message that you could use it over and over and over and over again.
Andre Tippett joining me on location in Minneapolis. You're working with Kay Jewelers this week. They make the ring of excellence that Hall of Famers receive, along with the gold jacket and the bronze bust. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can actually see this ring. So what are you doing all week long with Kay?
Well, I'm working with Kay. We're promoting, obviously, Kay being the official jeweler for the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the trusted creator of the Ring of Excellence, which is the ring that they give to every inductee. We obviously talked about my career and that I may have dropped a lot of quarterbacks in my day, but I've never dropped the ball on Valentine's Day. And this is this is us promoting it, man. So we got that winning thing. And we're telling people that they can go to K Jewelers or K.com to find that perfect gift. And we're trying to make sure that we're hooking everybody up.
Nailed that pitch. Before I let you go, who were some of the guys, you talk about the quarterbacks you dropped in the day, and we talked about some of the best to ever do it. Who were some of the guys you were most fired up to go up against, to prepare, to get in the trenches, and just
wow.
go to battle?
Wow. Well, you know, it was always about the quarterbacks. We gotta slow them up. We got to intimidate them. We got to create havoc. And, you know, you talk about Dan Marino. Everybody thought Dan Marino was soft. Dan Marino is the toughest quarterback that I know. Who had
really?
The quickest release that you just couldn't get to him. John Elway, quick, fast. You thought you had him, and he just found a way to scramble and avoid you, and it was just amazing. Jim Kelly. Jim Kelly is probably tougher than some of the most toughest linebackers that I know. I've hit him sometimes just knowing that he's not going to get up. And he'd get up and give you that little look like, for
like,
real?
That all you got?
Yeah. And I took my hat off to those guys, man. Those guys made you good. They made you good because we had to prepare for those guys anywhere from twice a year to maybe three times a year if you saw them for the third time.
So listen, before you go, what about Joe Montana? I mean, for so long it was just understood that was the GOAT, that nobody could see the field or do the things that Joe Montana did until Tom Brady came along. Where does Montana fit into this conversation?
Joe Montana is the baseline for all greatness. And for him to do what he did so long ago and still being talked about today, you gotta appreciate that. And I left him out, obviously, of the list of quarterbacks that I was talking about. That's only because I didn't see him that
sure.
much. I think we played him once or twice in my career, but I know of his greatness. I know that he was a guy that didn't have a whole lot.
Right.
You know?
Look at
it. He stepped out on the field, and he got it done. And, man, I was with him last summer, and it was just amazing talking with him about the game and where things are now and what he did to contribute to the greatness of this league. And you got to take your hat off to him.
Andre Tippett is my guest. One last question. I really appreciate you and your time. What about Tom Brady? When you've got a guy like that who leads from the front, who literally, not to be cliche, but this guy's the first one in, the last one out. It's a lifestyle thing. Literally every decision this guy makes is about making him a better football player. Does that impact not only the offense, you know, the quarterback room, the wide receivers, but the entire team? Can he impact the entire culture of that team by leading the way he does?
Absolutely. You can make people step up and follow. You can make people that are going to step back and say, well, maybe I'm not really sure. But he demands respect. He shows true leadership. He's willing to get out there and continue to push himself. He's motivated. He's motivated by the way that he prepares. And he's still, you know, that passion. I don't care what anybody say. You got that passion the way he does. That thing is gonna do a lot for you. And he continues to show that leadership.
See, the thing that I don't understand about him or other guys like that, he's 40. There's nothing left to accomplish. He can't spend what he has. He can't wear all the jewelry he's won. If anybody could say, hey, man, I'm good. I'm
yeah,
good. But he's
him.
Not. He's still on that grind.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's just him trying to set that, continue to set. Joe Montana
yeah.
set that bar. And I think Brady knows that. And it's like, okay, until I get to here, until I get that one more than he did, then I don't want to be on the same level. That's just competition. That's nothing bad.
That's how you guys are wired.
You know,
that's
just
how you're wired.
I got to go up one more.
I want to talk about that showdown last night.
Adam Silver is one of the best commissioners in sports, but if this guy wants to become a true legend, there is one thing he has to do right now. Move OKC and Philadelphia into the same conference. Hell, put them in the same division, because after yesterday's Sixers-Thunder game, it's clear the two of these teams playing twice a year is not nearly enough. It's clear now that the best rivalry in basketball is not Kyrie and LeBron. It's not KD Russ. It is Joel and Russ. This is a feud that got started way back in December when the Thunder barely beat the Sixers in Philly. Joel Embiid waved goodbye to Steven Adams when the Thunder big man fouled out. Then Russ waved goodbye to Embiid when the Thunder won that game in triple OT. Well, they met again yesterday, and not only did it live up to the hype, it smashed it. First, there was that dunk heard around the world when Westbrook tried to take a charge and ended up taking an L.
7:35 to go out top. Joel fakes on Adams, drives by him in the lane. Oh, man! Embiid just posterized Russell Westbrook. Joel Embiid flying through the air with the greatest of ease and crashes in with a right-hand jam.
Thanks to Sixers Radio for that. Hey, respect to Russ for trying to take that charge, I guess. But 6'3", trying to stop 7 feet with a head of steam was only going to end one way, with Russ on the floor and on a poster, and Joel staring down at him. I mean, that was an incredible moment. Probably, to that point, my favorite moment of the entire NBA season. But then that was followed by Philly's Justin Anderson with a put-back dunk and a flex. That was immediately followed by Russell Westbrook going coast-to-coast for a dunk with a flex and an alleged, quote, "I'm coming, mother bleeper." Incredible fire for late January for two teams that won't even see each other again until next season, which is exactly why the commissioner needs to invoke the so-called best interests of the game. Move these two teams into the same division stat, because I can't handle seeing them meet only twice a year. And if you don't want to put them in the same division, make this the first year that we do away with conferences for the playoffs and seed every team 1 through 16. Because the only thing better than more regular season games between these two teams would be a 7-game series between these two teams, especially after watching Russ stare down Joel and the Philadelphia bench as he dribbled out the clock. That was savage. That was a savage, cold, cold move. In fact, that was the scariest dribbling out of the clock I think I've ever seen. But the best part about the NBA right now is that that battle does not end just because the game does. There's always that post-game presser, which is when Russ was asked about the intensity of those two games.
Why do you think the two games against Philly this season have been as high energy as they were?
Not sure. Obviously, triple overtime there kind of picked up that, and then leading into this game after a little talk after game one, leading to this game, kind of was looking forward to it. But, you know, Oklahoma City 2-0.
Oklahoma City 2-0, as in scoreboard, look up at it, which I love. I love that. Just as much as I love the fact that Joel was not going to let it end there. He took that fight online, as you knew that he would, posting a pic of him dunking on Westbrook on Instagram. And the caption is so good. Tough loss. Hashtag trust the process. Except his location is even better. His location was crime scene investigation. As in, there was a murder committed in this photo and authorities are still investigating. Joel loses the game, Buddy wins the battle, and I can't wait for the next time these two teams get together. Because that is your best rivalry right now. My man Tom Curran stopping by. Tom, I see you looking around, checking it out. I mean, you are a mainstay on the row. How many of these things have you been to, and what do you make of this?
This is my 15th, Jim, and I just came out of the GameStop. They hauled me out of the GameStop to come over here, and I'm pretty soon going to go over to Toxic or whatever the hell that place is. Back to back.
I mean, what do you make of it generally?
It's bizarre.
I mean, it's different, but it's odd.
It's bizarre, but honestly, I don't feel as if, look, again, paid week at the epicenter of sports, going to watch an unbelievable game at the end of the weekend that everybody wants to be at, so I'm not going to kick rocks about it, but it is going to be unmistakably memorable just for the fact that we were in a friggin' mall the entire week.
Tom Curran joining us. All right, so let's talk about the Pats. From an emotional and psychological standpoint, how would you describe the state of this Pats team versus those that came before it? I mean, are relationships as strained and fractured as we're led to believe?
The tension and maybe personal fatigue is absolutely there. I don't think it is, at this point, any kind of an obstacle to overall success and winning. I don't think it's impeding their ability to get ready for games. I don't think it's impeding them on the field. But there is, to me, very much kind of, and I wrote this prior to Seth Wickersham's story on ESPN, kind of an end-of-the-party feel. With Jimmy Garoppolo out, Tom 40, Bill 66, Robert 76, Robert Kraft, Josh McDaniels leaving, Matt Patricia's leaving, it kind of has a finality feel to it. I might be wrong. They might be terrific next year. But you don't lose both coordinators and have a 40-year-old quarterback just keep pedaling off.
Tom Curran, my guest. So if you had to guess, who needs whom more? Does Brady need Belichick more than Belichick needs him? Who's the critical, pivotal guy in that relationship?
Well, now Belichick absolutely needs Brady more than the converse.
Right.
Until October 31st, it was different. But now that they shipped Jimmy Garoppolo off, there is no safety net. So that, to me, you know, flips everything. And that's the other interesting thing. You know, I was talking to Gerard Mayo. I do a show with him. And we were talking about the affinity that Josh had for Jimmy Garoppolo. And the fact that Josh is never going to get the credit that he deserves for Jimmy Garoppolo. He's going to go to San Francisco. If he blows up, Kyle Shanahan's going to be a genius. Well, Josh could have interviewed for that job. And Josh, if he really tried, could have had that job. Now, 6 months later, they send Jimmy Garoppolo, the guy that he developed, out there for a second-round pick. So you look at it, no, there's no safety net. But Josh spent all the time. Tom was basically on autopilot doing his own stuff. Most of the time, coaching time, was spent creating Jimmy, who they then traded. That, to me, is a real flashpoint in all of this.
Tom Curran joining us. All right, so if you had to guess, because there's been so much consternation about this, and really nobody seems to know, who made the call to trade Garoppolo? Was it Brady? Was it Belichick? Or was it Bob Kraft?
It absolutely wasn't Brady. It was Belichick. You know, the Krafts are absolutely willing, and they have said this to me, they think that Bill has earned the right to make his personnel decisions regardless of how head-scratching they may seem. And often they work out. So there was no intervention. But when Bill said in that post-trade conference call that this is a complex situation, I think he was alluding to a number of facts. One, we created this kid. We drafted him. He's done an excellent job. We've done an excellent job. He's going to be a great player in the league. But Tom Brady's the greatest player who's ever played. He's still playing at an MVP level. I don't know when he's all done, but we certainly can't spend $46 million on the position. And we're not going to roll the dice to try and franchise him and then have our entire roster askew because we have to keep two quarterbacks. So that's where it got complex. And I think, too, Jim, that because the player will reflect on the organization and the coach, I think that's part of the reason they sent us to San Francisco.
Tom Curran joining us. He's a Patriots insider for NBC Sports Boston. If you had to guess, I mean, are they going to rip this thing apart regardless of what happens on Sunday? Is this the final ride for this crew?
No. No. It's, to me, 2019 is the witching hour. Brady's up. Belichick's coached for 20 years. Gronk's up. Edelman's up. They really haven't done. If you look at their roster, there's not great depth. It's not a good team depth-wise. You get into their backups. You know, Nate Solder's an older guy. Devin McCourty's over 30. Gronk's had the injury problems. Hightower's had injury problems. It's, you know, people have referenced the cliff. The cliff is a team-wide thing unless they start recouping because they didn't have freaking draft picks, Jim.
Right.
They didn't have draft picks.
They didn't have draft picks, and it doesn't seem to matter who Belichick brings in. He puts them in the system, tells them to do their job, and they do, and it keeps happening. Now, things are changing, though, Tom. What about Brady? What about this Tom versus Time documentary? What do you make of the series, and is that something he would have ever done even a few years ago?
No. He said, and I talked to Gotham Chopra, the producer of it,
sure.
And he said, you know, I've asked Tom millions of times to do this, and he's always given me resistance. The reason he wanted to do it is he understood that after Deflategate, and after his mother's illness, and after that comeback that they had in the Super Bowl, he said, you know what, I want to create a record. This is, to me, remarkable enough that I want it down on film. Not just to promote TB12, and that's what's interesting as you watch these. It's not the infomercial for his, you know, lifestyle
company, right?
That I thought it was going to be, or that a lot of people thought it was going to be. It's tangentially there, but it's all about who he is, and I think, and that, again, that's a flashpoint for Belichick and Brady because Brady for 20 years has, you know, hasn't said poop if he had a mouthful, and now suddenly...
That, exactly, that's my next point. What do you think? I mean, Tom, you're different because you're close to these guys and you have access and you work. These guys are not showing up doing interviews, much less docuseries. What do you think Belichick thinks of that project?
Doesn't love it. You know, because...
Doesn't love it or he hates it?
I would say probably closer to hates it, but he also understands, and Brady understands, look, for 18 years I've done everything you've asked. I've taken less money so that you could build the roster the way you wanted to. I have had surrounding teammates who probably weren't that good at different occasions, and I've propped them up. I show up. I organize off-season stuff. If I want to pop my head up and do a few things, be a little more enterprising after 5 Super Bowl wins, can't I do that? And Belichick, being as old school as he is, kind of goes, well, see, you know what? I knew he'd turn into a diva quarterback. It only took him 18 years.
Right, right.
So there's that, and there's Guerrero being with it. And I'm a big fan of Guerrero. I think he's smart. I've seen him myself. You should, too. He'll fix you right up.
Good. I need some of that. I don't know if I need all the pliability treatments.
The pliability is tremendous, Jim.
Yeah? How do you know?
Because I pliable.
Are you more pliable?
I could, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's funny. I asked Gronk about it, who started doing it. After the game, the week after they beat Pittsburgh, when he had a catch where he reached down to his toes, I said, you're doing things that I haven't seen you be able to do. He goes, bends over, touches toes. I couldn't have done that last year. I couldn't just bend over and touch my toes. Because that's all they do. They don't do squats. They don't do, you know, flipping tires. They use bands.
Pliability. So if Brady's never played better than he is at 40, and if Gronk is telling you I can do things now that I've never done before, what is Belichick's issue with Guerrero?
That he is, well, basically that a schism is created between his medical staff. Because Bill, again, he's an old school traditionalist. He likes squats. He wants to see a guy improve in terms of strength. He wants to see how your strength is changing. He doesn't want to see Gronk doing this and then talking to the offensive lineman next to him and go, you know what, you probably shouldn't be doing all those benches and you probably shouldn't be doing all those squats. Why don't you do what I'm doing? Now Belichick's got a bunch of ballerinas on the offensive line. No, he's going to let, if you want to go see Alex for soft tissue stuff, go ahead and do that. But I still have a strength and conditioning staff here.
Tom Curran joining us. All right, before you go, I want to ask you about the game. But first, what about Josh McDaniels? He's going to get another shot. How do you think he fares as a head coach the second time through?
Better. Much better. I talked to Tony Dungy a little bit about this today. Jim Irsay is a hands-off owner, for as wacky as he seems at times. Dungy says he won't bother you. He's got a much better situation with Chris Ballard than he did when he went to Denver. One of the untold stories that Denver kind of had there was those were the early stages of dementia and Alzheimer's for Pat Bowlen.
Sure.
And there were things that he forgot, which really ended up leading somewhat to the miscommunication with Cutler. I don't know how it would have changed differently. I think 33-year-old Josh is not where he is now, and he's got a lot of maturing that he's done, but I think it'll be better.
I would hire the guy. I'm a huge fan. I think he's going to be much better and different for it. If you're Belichick right now, what concerns you most about Philadelphia Sunday?
Speed, defensive speed. That their ability to just flow to the ball and get after you defensively, and probably with Fletcher Cox and the rest of the guys that they have in their front and at their linebacker spot, they're a handful.
So how do you match up? I mean, you know Tom's going to get it out quickly. That offensive line does a pretty good job of keeping him clean, but this is a different animal. In fact, that Philadelphia defense, how different is it? They're fast. They're really fast, sideline to sideline. How are they different, though, than Jacksonville, which is also very fast defensively?
I think they're better schooled. I think they're smarter. I think Jim Schwartz he's got guys in that program for longer. And it's not different from Atlanta either, which is not different from Seattle. All of them are ridiculously fast. What you end up seeing is Josh is going to have to come up with some of that, you know, double reverse action, jet sweep stuff to get them flowing one way and hit them back the other. But I would not be surprised if the Patriots continue with that general. They haven't scored in any of their 7 previous Super Bowls in the first quarter. 0 points. I would imagine that'll happen again.
Yeah, he seemed pretty happy about that when that was brought up the other day.
He's heard that too.
Listen, one last thought. From Seattle to Atlanta to Jacksonville, one of the things that keeps coming up time and time again against the Pats is that these teams are not making plays in big moments. They have a hard time keeping a lead. They have a hard time keeping their composure. Why is that?
Belichick and Brady. You just don't know which way to go. Look at what we said about Kyle Shanahan. Why are you throwing when you're in field goal range? Well, you had to keep your foot on the pedal. You had to keep it trying to pick up that first down. Backfired for him. So he was a dummy. Now Doug Marrone's a dummy, just running Leonard Fournette into the line 15 times in the second half and trying to get out of there alive. So there is no way to do it. They flipped probability on its head so that those game managers, those Ernie Adams types that these other coaches and teams have, it's hard for them to do the math. Really, to me, it's right. just doing the math. How do we get to the end of the game and have more points?
It's always about the math, no matter what. It's always about the math. The math does not add up. Last thought, can't let you go without getting a prediction. Who wins and why?
Monday? You're going to do this to me on Monday?
Come on, man. You've had this prediction locked and loaded probably for months.
It's 27-26, Jim.
Who?
It's 27-26.
Come on, man. Who?
I'll call you on Friday.
Great. just know that I will find you on Friday because of that.
That's a cover.
All right, Tom. I got you. Tom Curran joining us here on The Row. He is a mainstay on Radio Row. He's a Patriots insider for NBC Sports Boston and the co-author of Relentless with Julian Edelman. One thought about that. What was that project like? And what was it like working with him on that project?
It was fun. He's very much a regular guy. Very intense. I enjoyed it. He was terrific.
Tom Curran, my guest. Tom, great to see you. Thanks so much. I know you got a lot
Thanks,
to
Jimmy.
Do. See you again
Appreciate
soon.
Appreciate it.
Tom Curran. Jenny Vrentis is my guest. Jenny, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. Jenny, now I know you're currently road tripping en route to the Super Bowl. Exactly where are you right now, and how is that roadie going?
Yeah, we left Foxborough after the AFC Championship game, and we've been driving across up to Minneapolis. So right now we had just visited Jake Elliott's high school in a suburb of Chicago to learn a little bit more about, you know, his sort of unlikely journey to becoming the Eagles kicker. We have a couple more stops before arriving in Minneapolis later in the week.
Jenny, the fact that you and I are talking so soon after we last spoke speaks to what you're getting done. You're doing some work now. You had another really interesting piece that I wanted to talk to you about. In fact, an incredible piece on John Carroll University and all the connections between the Blue Streaks football program and the Patriots. So to set that stage, where is John Carroll and how far back does its history as a hotbed for NFL minds go?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty remarkable. It's located in northeastern Ohio. It's a suburb of Cleveland. It's a pretty small school. The student body is about 3,500, but they have all these NFL ties. You know, it goes back to Don Shula. Obviously, he's the most famous alum, you know, the winningest coach in NFL history. Obviously, he went there because he was considering becoming a priest initially. But then there's a few other branches of the NFL tree. The sons of Bill Polian went there, and they were teammates with Tom Telesco and Dave Caldwell, who went on to become NFL general managers, of course. And then there's this whole Patriots tree that began with Josh McDaniels and Nick Casario, and there are seven Patriots staff members who went to John Carroll, which is a remarkable number for a relatively small Division III school that plays most of its games, you know, in front of a couple thousand people in Ohio Stadium.
Again, with a student body totaling 3,500, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. You've got that many people coming from that program and that school to make it into the NFL. Now, what about two guys you just mentioned, McDaniels and Casario? How did they first meet, and then what were their roles on the football team?
Yeah, they were competing for the backup quarterback job in the mid-90s. And Nick Casario won the backup job, but in the first game of the season, the fifth-year senior quarterback got hurt. Casario stepped in and held on to the job. He left John Carroll with something like 16 school records. Josh McDaniels had been a high school quarterback in Ohio as well. He was looking for another way to contribute, so he moved to receiver. So Nick Casario was throwing passes to Josh McDaniels for their 4 years together at John Carroll, and they stayed friends. And so Josh McDaniels got a job in New England. He wanted to move up the ladder. He had a find someone to fill his role. He recommended Nick Casario, and they both, you know, have earned the trust of Belichick, obviously have rose through the ranks quickly there. And they're, you know, they really have a close relationship on game days. They're in regular contact. Nick Casario is on the headset talking to Josh McDaniels during the game, which is unusual for a director of personnel. But obviously that connection they forged as teammates at John Carroll has really carried through for a long time.
Jenny Vrentis joining us. Meantime, Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia also played his college football at another small school, RPI. Where is RPI and what is their football program like?
Yeah, so that was another fun stop. That was our first stop right after Foxborough. It's in Troy, New York, which is near Albany, Rensselaer Polytechnic, and he was a aeronautical engineering major there. So what we did was we sat in on the type of class that Matt Patricia would have taken. The class that we visited was space flight mechanics, and, you know, really a lot of very in-depth material. The professor was in front of the room, you know, drawing equations on a chalkboard. But I think, you know, what you really got out of it, while, you know, in football, you're not calculating, you know, the impact of an asteroid if it hit the Earth. But there are a lot of things that transfer sort of the attention to detail, the analytic thinking, sort of the thought process, to process data and come to conclusions. I think all of those things really do apply. I think an engineering education kind of prepares you for some of the things you might have to do as a football coach, especially on a, you know, working for a guy like Bill Belichick.
All right, so he's a literal rocket scientist. I mean, obviously very, very bright. He's done a great job working for Belichick. How do you think Patricia will fare as a head coach?
You know, I think that's the question with all of these coaches that come from Belichick's tree is, you know, how much success will they have when they go out on their own? The results have been mixed, you know, not always the best results. But I do think, you know, for both Patricia and McDaniels, obviously it's different situations for them. McDaniels just will be his second time around. And I think Patricia, I think he's a great fit for the Lions. You know, he's, you know, I think he's going to come in with some new ideas for that defense. And I think you find when you talk to coaches around the league, they feel like his in-depth knowledge of what opposing offenses is doing is, you know, superior to a lot of coordinators in the league. And I think he also has a strong relationship with his players. That's something at RPI, the coaches would go around and greet all their players before the games. Matt Patricia does that now as a defensive coordinator. And in the locker room after the AFC Championship game, he's going from stall to stall, hugging guys that had made big plays for him, like Stephon Gilmore had that fourth down pass breakup. He just puts guys in position to be successful, and I think that's true on defense, but will also translate to the entire roster.
Jenny Vrentis joining us for a few more moments. Before I let you go, let me ask you about another key figure in the Patriots organization. Might as well jump into Rob Gronkowski's youth. You did a piece of his time at Williamsville North High School, which is in the northern suburbs of Buffalo. When he was in school, they had something known as the Gronkometer. What was the Gronkometer, and what did it measure?
Yeah, really interesting to hear the coaches say that. So basically, they would sort of monitor him during the game. Now, the basketball coach is the one who called it the Gronkometer. If it kind of got too high, they would maybe pull him from the game and, you know, take a couple plays off. In football, I don't know if they use that exact word in football. That was the basketball coach's term, but it was the same thing. They could tell that he was getting a little fidgety. They wanted to make sure they would be able to finish the game, so they pull him out for a few plays, cool him down on the sidelines. And it's sort of interesting, right, because in Western New York, we saw that play against the Bills this year where Gronkowski delivered that cheap shot to Tre'Davious White after he picked off Tom Brady. He dove off on top of him after the play was over. And so I think that was sort of an example of the Gronkometer kind of hitting 10 at that point in time. But it was interesting to hear, you know, the coaches saying, this was a guy who was so competitive, who, you know, the fire was so great that they would just kind of keep tabs on him. And he never protested when they pulled him from the game for a play or two. He recognized he needed to cool down as well and then went back in and sort of dominated the game again.
Yeah, Jenny, I was going to say, if this is a guy who's nearly impossible to stop in the NFL and looks like a man amongst boys playing among the biggest, fastest, strongest athletes in the world, what in the world was that guy like in high school?
I know. They told a story about, you know, one time they were practicing at a rival high school, and he went up for a dunk, and when he came down, the rim was still in his hand, and the backboard shattered, and they gave him a piece of that backboard at his senior banquet and said, you know, or the year-end banquet, and they said, you know, first backboard shattered. So obviously he was, you know, on the football field, he'd be getting double and triple teams. So I think that sort of played into when his emotions would bubble up, right? He was getting all this extra attention. Felt like he couldn't do all the things he wanted to do on the field because he was getting fouled or you know, double covered, triple covered. So I think that sort of played into it as well, that he always just wants to make an impact on the field.
All right, so what about that? I'm glad you brought that up. Finally, he missed last year's game because of a back injury. He played in one of the losses to the Giants with a sprained ankle. So if he is healthy, how big of an impact do you expect him to have in this Super Bowl?
Right, and that was interesting, too. You know, his football coach from high school said that some of those rings where he wasn't at full strength or when he was on IR, he feels like they're not really his rings. And so I think, you know, obviously it looks like he's on, you know, he's moving forward in the protocol, you know, and if, you know, if he's able to play, which it looks like he should be at this point, you know, obviously he's huge out there. You saw the difference in the second half of the AFC Championship game, and especially without Edelman. Gronkowski is such an important factor for Brady out there on the field, and really the dynamics of the offense totally change when he's not out there.
Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it. I'll check you tomorrow. I'm out.